I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 88 of the Epochs of the Loadseaters. I'm joined by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about the second emperor, Tiberius. Why are we talking about Tiberius?
Well, we've been jumping around a bit recently, haven't we? Yeah. We went to the Far East, to the way out west, and last time World War II. Yeah. I thought I'd take it back to
Rome.
Right in my wheelhouse. If this is really something I've studied on and off for, 25 odd years now.
Yeah.
And the sources on it, just to say straight off the bat, Tacitus, Suetonius, Dio, Cassius, I've read them inside out.
Yeah.
The annals of Tacitus, I've sort of read an embarrassing number of times over the years. Like every few years I go back to it.
Yeah.
Got it on audiobook, listened to it a bunch of times. So anyway.
That's how I feel about Plutarch.
Right, right. And Tacitus is particularly the annals. There's just loads of it is on Tiberius.
Hmm.
Arguably, the first emperors we know the most about it, it's Claudius and Tacitus. Because all of Tacitus really on Caligula is missing.
Right.
That's the problem with Tacitus. It is a bit, or the annals anyway, is a bit fragmentary. But we've got all of Tiberius.
Okay.
So it's in sort of fantastic detail, really.
Oh, that's good.
And I like the story. He's an interesting guy because some of the emperors are just out and out bad. Some are kind of out and out good, kind of. But Tiberius is a mixed bag. He's sort of, and that's what I think that's interesting when people are more difficult to pin down.
And also, because he's so early in the institution of the emperor, he's not working from a long established blueprint either.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like he doesn't know what to do. Figure it out as they go.
One of the things he said upon becoming emperor, he said, everything Augustus ever did or said, his immediate predecessor, Augustus, everything, I'm going to treat that as though it's law.
Right, okay.
Which is good and bad. Yeah, I mean, he destroyed the Republic, though, so.
True, but he was trying to bring morality back to Rome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did some good things.
So he wasn't terrible.
Sure. Where I say Tiberius is a mixed bag, he's mostly bad.
Well.
He's pretty much, by the end of his life, a monster, a sex criminal tyrant.
Right.
So he's mostly bad.
See, I've never actually studied Tiberius. I know of Tiberius, obviously. But my studying of this period of Rome tends to be from about the sort of the Gracchi, through to Marius and Sulla, through to Caesar and Pompey, through to Augustus and Antony, and then generally, it's like, and then Rome lived happily ever after, you know, which obviously it didn't.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, that's the very exciting, dramatic bit. And so I'm aware of Tiberius, and then, what was it, after Tiberius, is it Titus?
After Tiberius is Caligula.
It's Caligula.
Right. And then Claudius.
Then Claudius, then Titus.
Then Nero.
Then Nero.
Yeah, then the year of the four emperors, then Vespasian, then Titus.
Right, really?
Yeah.
My chronology's terrible.
We'll pick up the story.
I'm not any kind of expert on the Roman Empire, though, because I was never taken a tremendous amount of time to study like the later Roman Empire emperors.
But fair enough, we can pick up the story sort of if you'd like, if your knowledge stops around Antony and Augustus.
I know what happens with Antony and Augustus, so
right.
Let's just go from the death of Augustus.
Well, let's pick up. Yeah, so Tiberius's early life is sort of during those wars. So he was born in 42 BC, which is 2 years after the assassination of Caesar.
And he's Augustus's son, right?
Adopted son. Yeah. Augustus never had a son. He only ever had one child, a daughter, Julia.
Right.
who came to a sticky end, which we'll get into. She was married to Tiberius at one point. She was married to Agrippa, really? Who was much, much older. Yeah, yeah, we'll get into all of that.
This is all weird, yeah.
So this is one of these stories, I've got to say, let everyone know, heads up, that I'm going to have to put up the Julio-Claudian family tree a lot, because a lot of this really is about that.
Yeah.
And you know the old classic cliche that there's loads of names, the same name gets come up.
Yeah.
Well, in this one, it's the name Drusus. There's three different Drususes.
Oh.
And I'll make clear exactly which one's which. But yeah. Tiberius's brother is a Drusus. His own son is a Drusus. And then one of his nephews is a Drusus. Right. And they're all sort of important.
Brilliant.
But I'll try and make it as clear as possible.
Yeah.
And put up...
Clear as mud. Wonderful.
Pictures of the actual family tree to try and make it clear. So Tiberius's childhood... is all his formative years in childhood is the backdrop of it is
the civil war.
The civil wars. Yeah. So the Battle of Actium, 31 BC, Tiberius is like what, 10, 11 years old. So this is what happened. His mother, Livia, was married to someone else, a minor, the elder Tiberius.
Right.
She was married into the Claudian family, and that Claudian family are extremely aristocratic. Sort of, I've seen it said that they couldn't be more blue-blooded. Really, the Claudians, they're as aristocratic as it gets. And his father's side was like the Neroni's side, and anyway, he was sort of two cousin branches of the Claudian family.
Hmm.
His blood couldn't be sort of more aristocratic.
Couldn't be bluer.
Exactly. But then his father, the elder Tiberius, is on the wrong side of the civil wars. At the very, very first, he's on Caesar's side, but then very quickly he switched to Antony's side.
Oh.
And then when Antony and Augustus Octavian are having their civil war, Tiberius and his mum, Tiberius when he's young, like 4 years old and stuff, his mum and dad, they're on the run.
Right.
They spend some time in Sicily under the protection of Sextus Pompey.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, they're so, totally on the run.
Yeah, on the wrong side of every single one of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's one story where they're literally fleeing for their lives and Livia like gets her hair singed and she's running through a forest trying to escape for their lives. And then his mum is pregnant with his brother, Drusus, the first of these Drususes. She's actually pregnant with him when the civil wars are sort of, well, not, they're not ended, but when... their family gets captured. There's a period there where there's some sort of amnesty and they get captured and they go back to Rome. And Octavian takes a liking to her and says, I don't care that you're married and you've already got a kid and you're pregnant. Divorce him, you're marrying me.
Okay.
She's like, okay, yeah. I'm dumping this loser.
Well, I mean, it's either that or who knows what happens.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
You know, all bets are off at this point, especially if you're a member of the aristocracy.
Some historians have said, was that coercion or not? Well, they lived more or less happily after that. So it was totally in her political interest to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, it's a no-brainer. It's like, look, he's probably going to kill us all if we don't.
Possibly. Right. Well, yeah.
Like, let's be real. But like, that's weird on Octavian's part, though, isn't it? It's like, oh, look at that pregnant mother over there.
Yeah. Two things. One is that she was the perfect, he'd hoped to have children with her, and her family is the perfect family.
Right,
because his family, the Julii, particularly his branch of the Julii, is really, really middle class.
Yeah,
really middle class, really. Yeah. And she is couldn't be more aristocratic.
Yeah,
so there's that, and apparently she was very attractive.
A ticket to lineal legitimacy.
Right.
I mean, still, it's still weird.
It is a bit. Well, everyone says that, that like the day after she gives birth to Drusus, he marries her, or like 2 days after, or something. And in Roman times, that's scandalous. That's absolutely
scandalous. Now.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah.
This is like, it is weird.
Mm.
Okay.
I think it's because she's proven that she wasn't barren and she was very blue-blooded and he really fancied her. Apparently she was attractive.
So. I need a guarantee that you can have kids. Well, I'm pregnant. Well, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, right. But they never did have any offspring.
Oh, interesting. Right. Yeah.
So he'd been married twice before, even though he was already quite young. He was quite young by this point still.
How old was she at this point?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but she was about his age, I believe.
Right.
So quite young.
Yeah.
Like under 25, I
think. Yeah, right, okay. So she seemed like a fairly safe bet.
Right, yeah. And he'd already been married a couple of times and had a daughter, this Julia. So they both had children from previous marriages.
But important to note that aristocratic Roman marriages were political.
Oh, yeah, divorce in the Roman world.
Totally common. Completely
common, yeah. It's much more a property contract type thing.
Yeah.
Than it is like a Christian high Middle Ages, you're together forever.
And that's an important point to make as well. Like the concept of marriage being a sort of eternal sacred bond, very Christian.
Yeah.
It's the pre-Christian era.
Yeah. The Romans, you could get divorced relatively easily. Which did not think of it like this
at all.
Yeah. Michael Grant calls the Claudians a supremely ancient lineage.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So his earliest childhood, we're told by Suetonius that he passed his earliest years amid hardship and tribulation, since he was everywhere the companion of his parents on their flight. So perhaps his earliest memories are terrifying memories that if we're captured, we could be killed. And that does make the psychology of the adult person. If your early childhood is filled with like horror and terror, it makes for a much very, very serious, dark character quite often. Not always, but quite often.
It's hard to imagine that it doesn't.
Right. And that is that is one of the things about Tiberius, is that he was brooding, foreboding, unforgiving, and capricious. He changed his mind. He made sure everyone around him quite often didn't know where they stood.
Right.
So that's one of the things to bear in mind. All right, so again, just quickly to say, his sort of early formative years, though, he would have been aware that even though he's not formally adopted, he is the stepson of the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah, so he doesn't want for anything, and everyone calls him Sir.
Oh, God, yeah. And he knows that his blood, he's a Claudian.
Yeah.
So his blood is through and through, and his adopted stepfather, although not formally adopted till much, much later in life. But yet his stepfather is the princeps initas. He is the first Roman.
And his mother is the first wife.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so 31 BC is acting, as I say, so he's about 10 years old. And in 27 BC, so when, he's about 14 or 15 year old, Augustus really cements the political settlement to make himself completely undisputed master of the Roman world, master of the world in a sense.
Well, absolutely, not even in a sense.
Right, yeah.
Who could possibly challenge him?
And so Tiberius, quite early on, by sort of 38 BC, by 26 BC, when his sort of adult career starts, he's in the military.
Yeah.
He's just sort of firmly in the military.
As most Romans are.
Right, yeah. In later days, they would do anything to get out of it.
Yes.
But by this point still,
it
was just completely accepted.
Yeah. I mean, almost every famous Roman that you know of spent some time in the military.
Mm. He seemed to have taken to it like a duck to water.
Oh, right.
He really liked it. He was uncomfortable in polite society a bit. He was uncomfortable networking and being charming and making friends. But in the camp, where he could order men around and where his word was law, he liked that. It worked for him. And that's one thing to mention. In a Roman military camp, the legates or the military tribunes or the very upper echelons of it, you've got the power of absolute life and death.
Yeah.
Over all the men. So you're...
You are the magister.
Yeah. Pure authority, liquid authority, really.
Like complete judicial authority. As well.
Oh, yeah, completely legal.
Exactly. And this is important because a lot of... Obviously, in the modern world, that's not the way things work.
Mm.
And people don't realise that, okay, that's great. But, imagine you're 500 miles from Rome on the frontier of the empire... No, that's where the justice is. It gets served that day.
Yeah.
You don't have a lawyer. You don't get to wait.
Yeah, you don't have to justify yourself or anything.
No.
You can just say to a centurion, whip all those men.
Yeah.
To death, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you will be unpopular and stuff, but you can legally do that.
It may well lead to a mutiny, but...
Yeah.
legally, no one's going to stop you.
Right, yeah.
You'll just get a terrible reputation.
So he starts his military career straight in as a military tribune, which is completely normal for such a well-born person.
Well, he's an aristocrat, enters in his officer level. What a surprise.
But as a military tribune, you're sort of second in command of a legion, basically.
Yeah.
There's the actual legate who is in charge. So Yeah, just getting used to high command straight away.
But he's probably had a lot of experience commanding servants his entire life. You know, this is not unusual for a person like this.
Yeah, well, as a boy, or just before you become legally a man, he was involved in certain processions and all the sort of usual thing of a Roman aristocrat. He's just used to all those things. Again, one of the other things about his character throughout his whole life is that he was, what's the right word for it, but very sort of pompous, maybe.
What a surprise.
Because some Roman aristocrats would get into his, like Germanicus, would get into the character Germanicus in a bit. He was very, very personable.
Yeah, gregarious.
And wasn't pompous, yeah. Right. Went out of his way not to be
very
arrogant.
Yeah.
Right. But most of them were, and Tiberius was with bells on.
Yeah.
Like looking down his nose. It was beneath his dignity to be nice, basically.
Look, I'm one of the most important men of the world. Who cares about you?
Yeah, right.
I mean, what? You can understand his perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, whether I'm polite to you or not doesn't change the fact that my rank is here and your rank is somewhere down here.
Yeah, and don't you forget it.
Yeah. And this is another thing as well. Like Roman society was strictly hierarchically ranked as well. This is what makes Octavian's desire to essentially buy his way into a high blood lineage so important. Like this scale, I mean, it literally is. It was literally called social rank, wasn't it? Like these sort of are deeply embedded into the Roman psyche. You know, if you were a pleb, there was no way you were getting anywhere near your betters, and they were literally your betters. I mean, their party was called the best, the Optimates. They literally saw themselves as being better. And in many ways, they probably were. You know, they probably had better education, better food, better quality of life, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's very interesting how, like, rarefied all of this is. It's real to these people. Whereas in the sort of modern egalitarian mind, we have a hard time imagining that there would be such a stratified society. And it's like, nope. Very much like that, and you didn't question it. But that's what made it so important to Octavian. So he's probably just thinking, wow, she's good looking and she's amazing. And, you know, her lineage is amazing. Great, I'm in. She's pregnant. Okay, I'll wait. You know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. One of the first, one of the main distinctions between sort of a caste system is the patrician and the plebeian and patrician ranks. And the Claudians are just, couldn't be more patrician, really. Also, by 24 BC, he's made a quaestor, but it does put you on the path to sort of being an aedile, or, you know, up to a praetor. It definitely puts you formally on the cursus honorum, the ladder of honours, which, of course, the highest one is consul.
Yeah.
But it's around this time also, about 24 BC, when there's a figure I won't go into much. There's not time for all these people, but there was a figure in the Julio-Claudian family, Marcellus, who was a bit older, and Augustus, I'll just call him Augustus from this point onwards, had been grooming to be his successor.
Yeah.
And he dies sort of out of the blue in about the same time. And now, so it seems like the seed is planted in Livia's mind that maybe her sons, Tiberius and his younger brother Drusus, who incidentally got on very well with each other, perhaps they can be sort of groomed to take over empire. And Augustus never really wanted that. All the way through,
he obviously wanted his own son.
Exactly. He wanted people that were his blood relatives, wherever possible. And that story plays out loads here.
Right.
In the end, he's trying to groom his grandsons when they're little kids, this decades after this. Because he doesn't want Tiberius. He doesn't want Drusus. They're good men. They're very handy to sort of run empire.
But it's not his lineage.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah. And it seems like Augustus saw in Tiberius this sort of dark, brooding character and thought it wasn't right for Rome to go to him. He's not of the right character.
So lots of subtle factors.
Yeah. In fact, let me read a quote here about his character from Dio. Dio says, he possessed a most peculiar nature. He never let what he desired appear in his conversation, and what he said he wanted, he usually did not desire at all. On the contrary, his words indicated the exact opposite of his real purpose. He denied all interest in what he longed for, and urged the claims of what he hated. He would exhibit anger over matters that were very far from arousing his wrath and make a show of affability where he was most vexed. He would pretend a pity. He would pretend to pity those whom he severely punished and would retain a grudge against those whom he pardoned. Sometimes he would regard his bitterest foe as if he were his most intimate companion, and again he would treat his dearest friend like a complete stranger. In short, he thought it bad policy for the sovereign to reveal his thoughts. This was often the cause, he said, of great failures, whereas by the opposite course, far more and greater success were attained.
Right, and this, not to try and psychoanalyze the man 2,000 years after his death, but you can see why, after having such a tumultuous childhood, he would want to essentially keep the world at arm's length.
Yeah.
You know, so, no, I don't want you understanding me or knowing me at all.
That's absolutely what he does. Absolutely. And the older he gets, because he lives to be, 77 years old? He lives to grand old age. He rules for over 22, 23 years. And by the end, it's that taken to extremes, pushing the world away. And whenever the world encroaches, he's really cruel and capricious.
Right. I'll make you regret it.
Yeah. He was married to Vipsania, who was Agrippa's daughter, about the right age.
Yeah.
They get married.
Yeah.
And apparently he really loved her. They had a few kids together, including a son, Drusus.
Gay.
So
loving your wife.
Yeah. Mm. Weirdo.
What's wrong with you?
They have a son, Drusus, and he's called Drusus the Younger because his uncle, Tiberius' brother, is Drusus. He's like the main Drusus, if you like. So I'll call him Drusus the Younger. Mm-hmm. So they have a son early on. Drusus does make it in full blown into adulthood and everything. Drusus the Younger. In 21 BC, well, Agrippa dies. Mm. Agrippa had been married to Augustus' daughter, Julia, even though he's much, much older. Yeah. It was a political thing. But then he dies, sort of of old age, essentially, being worn out. He didn't reach a grand old age.
He wasn't a young man, though.
No, he definitely wasn't a young man, yeah.
Yeah.
So they had two children, Lucius and Gaius. So they are Augustus's grandchildren, Lucius and Gaius.
Yeah.
And Augustus, because he hasn't got his own son, pins all his hopes on these Lucius and Gaius. He has all his hopes on them. And from the very earliest age, he thinks of them as like a new Romulus and Remus. They're born 2 years apart.
Right.
They're like, he wants them to inherit.
I mean, it's nice that the grandfather loves his grandchildren and everything, but there's a kind of weird aspect when it's Augustus about all of this.
And it's like your best friend that you grew up with, you marry him to your daughter. Yeah, it's all a little bit odd, but it's politics, is what it is. It's politics. He needed to keep Agrippa sweet. He needed to keep him close. And by the end, the only thing that really guaranteed that is letting him marry into the imperial family.
Yep.
But he dies. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Augustus, or maybe Livia, say to Tiberius, right, you're divorcing Vipsania, who you love, and you're marrying Julia, who is... And there's no kind way of putting this, a famous whore, strumpet, loose woman, like, but to crazy lengths. Like, everyone knew she slept around. She would take multiple lovers in the forum and stuff.
Why do I have to marry her mother?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Of all of the women in Rome?
And Tiberius was really quite straight-laced.
Yeah, I imagine he would be.
Yeah. He wasn't, because lots of Roman emperors, later in his life is a different story, much different story.
Yeah.
But to begin with, he was very straight-laced. He didn't like her. He didn't want to be near her. He kind of hated her.
Why would you?
Yeah. And it was one of those, quite often it's the way with things, everyone knows about her other than Augustus, you know? Or maybe he deliberately shut his ears to it.
Yeah, well, can't have been that ignorant.
Yeah.
And the irony of this, of course, is Augustus was famously moralizing,
right? Yeah,
and
yeah.
Moralistic, and imposed strict moral standards on the Romans.
So the hypocrisy of that wasn't lost on anyone. It's like everyone knows that your own daughter is, yeah,
but she's daddy's girl.
All right. Yeah.
And this, I mean, it's again not to psychoanalyze, but like, come on, it's the classic rebelling against an overbearing father, isn't it?
Well, yeah, quite possibly.
It's,
yeah,
it's totally could classic.
Be that. Could be that.
Like, I'm not, you know, again, I don't want to psychoanalyze 2,000 years after the fact, but come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Titus, she's your girl.
Yeah. And so her and Tiberius do have a child, but he dies in infancy. And sort of after that, it seems in Tiberius's mind, he's just done. He's not going to touch her again. He's not interested. He doesn't want to be in the same room with her, sort of thing. And of course, that breeds hatred in her. Apparently, when they were young, so they're sort of the same age, kind of grew up together, well, in the same household, really. Apparently, when they were very young or teenagers, they did sort of quite fancy each other. But by this point, by adulthood, they end up hating each other, really.
Right.
Okay, just to move away from that then, his military career, which is a big part of his life. Once he becomes emperor, and he doesn't become emperor till he's in his early 50s, once he becomes emperor, he stops all his military life ends. Mm. And that's not always the case. Like later generations, later periods,
Roman emperors. Who were on the front, like Aurelius and others.
Yeah, Trajan is sort of a classic example for me. He's emperor, but he still goes and leads legions in the field. Well, Tiberius, at that point, in his mind, that was beneath an emperor's dignity to do that sort of thing.
And he'd already done it.
And yeah, he'd already done it.
Yeah.
But so the first part of his life there, really, he couldn't really be more of a military man. And he's really successful.
Mm.
There's an old saying, I should have picked out the quote, I can't remember, but it's something like his exercises were like bloodless battles.
Oh, this
and
is
his
from
battles.
No, this is from the Jewish Wars. This was a Jewish commentator talking about the Romans. I remember a documentary about this I watched years ago now, but this Jewish commentator, you know, some author was just trying to explain to the Jews why they were losing to the Romans a lot. And said, look, these guys are mental. Like you are an artisan, you know, who picks up a shield and a spear and goes out as a militia, and these are professionals. And so their battles are like bloody drills, and their drills are like bloodless battles.
Yeah, that's it. Know?
And yeah,
I think at some point, whether it was whether they were stealing that quote, it was said about Tiberius.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, but they must have been just endemic in the Roman legions at this point.
Yeah,
because I mean they've been professional for a couple of generations now.
Since Marius.
That's it. I want to say Marcellus for some reason. No, but since Marius. So, and that was it was a few generations prior to this.
Oh God, decades and decades ago by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 80 odd years or more ago. Yeah.
So the Roman legions have been a professional organization for quite some time now. Of course, they're going to have these unbelievable standards.
Yeah, yeah. And he rules them with an iron fist when he's in charge. So by like 20 BC, he's the head of a legion.
Yeah.
And he's all over the place. At first, he fights in Spain and smashes them. Something fierce, to be quite honest. A quote from Suetonius, he said, he served his stepfather in the field with incomparable loyalty and industry, and no other Roman of his age spent so many years commanding great armies in battle. Says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yep, says it all.
And he was so prolific as a commander. It was known. Horace, great poet of the day, wrote poems about him, certain lines saying he was a marvel and a prodigy in battle, carving vast havoc. As tireless and determined as the wave-harrying south wind.
Must have been pretty good.
It's obviously a bit overblown, isn't it? It's obviously like a little bit of imperial propaganda. And yet, there's no doubt that he was,
Just because it's imperial propaganda doesn't mean it has to be false.
Right, yeah. Tacitus says Augustus sent him just to the German frontiers 9 times.
Really?
Yeah. But he was all over the place. So in around 20 BC... He is in charge of a legion out in Armenia. Now, this at this point, Armenia had been sort of an on and off theatre of conflict for the Romans. Back in the days of Caesar, Crassus had gone out there, tried to win some, got himself in a...
Went brilliantly, yeah.
In a spot of bother. Was it the Battle of Carrhae?
Carrhae.
Yeah. Where Crassus got himself captured and ultimately killed in the end. But so at that point, Tiberius goes out there and through a mixture of force and diplomacy, puts a new puppet client king on the throne and settles things down and just does a good job, whether it be by diplomacy or by actual force of arms, does a good job out there. And he comes back to sort of high ovations. Augustus doesn't want to give him a formal triumph.
Doesn't get the triumph
then. No, because by this point, triumphs are... very rare. I mean, if you give someone a triumph, you're sort it would be sort of like saying you're my second in command. Or we're making you destined to be the next emperor. And by this point, Augustus still doesn't want to do that. Yeah. He's got his little his grandsons, Gaius and Lucius.
And the thing is as well, like Augustus has got to be constantly worried about being overthrown by him, right? Because there's no like ancient tradition that says can't do that. I mean, Augustus won it through a civil war. Everyone before him won their position through civil war. Titus is really good with the soldiers. He's really good at winning battles.
Tiberius,
not Titus, yeah. He's really good at winning battles. Like, it must be on Augustus' mind where he's like, well, what does stop him from doing that?
Yeah.
Could just march a legion. It's got to be constantly in the back of his mind. It's got to be.
Yeah, yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. He wants to keep him at just the right amount of arm's length.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things it does seem to be the case is that the mother, Livia, he's completely loyal to her, though.
Right.
Like whatever she tells him to do, sort of, he might not be happy about it, but he will actually do. Like, I think there's no doubt we wouldn't dream of killing her husband, the man she is loyal to and she loves. But you never know, right? You never know.
No, you don't know.
You don't know who's in his ear.
Especially if he's someone who's constantly keeping his true personality obscured through deceit and confusion.
And he's quite a closed book as well. You don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
So, right.
So, you know, like, Augustus' mum, no, he's not going to do that. He loves his mum. You know, no, nobody can feel secure.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be horrible.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds
really
awful.
Horrible. Just to make sure I got the chronology right here, in 19 BC is when he first marries the Vipsania.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, so it's then, and that's he has his Drusus the Younger quite quickly. So just to montage through the next few years a little bit, in down to sort of 15 BC, he's fighting all over the place. He's fighting in Gaul with his brother Drusus, who's also a great commander, and there's this thing where you said sometimes Roman aristocrats are absolutely adored and loved by the men and by the people, by everyone, because they're charismatic. And they're not like this weird, brooding, dark figure. They're genuinely loved. Mm. It's hard not to love certain people, right? Some people just exude charisma and nearly everyone loves them. Well, his brother, Drusus, seems to be one of those.
Oh, I bet he was a big fan of that.
Well, it's funny. It seems people say historians, even ancient historians at the time, and historian modern scholars and things, they say that this Drusus was like a good effect on Tiberius, a calming effect.
Yeah.
If there was anyone that would draw him back from the abyss,
it was
his own brother,
because
they got on very well. They really, really seemed to love each other. You know, did a lot of things together.
Yeah.
Went and fought out in all over the place in the Alps. In the Alps region, in modern-day Austria, all over parts of Germany. In this period, at one point, Tiberius relocates about 40,000 Germans into Gaul just to break their will, to stop them fighting, to stop an insurgent war.
Yeah.
So he'll just physically deport tens of thousands of German tribesmen.
You say it like that's unusual for the time period.
Well, regardless of that, it shows a will of steel.
Oh, sure.
It shows like, no, this is the policy, and I don't care the misery that he causes.
Well, no, they didn't.
Right.
this is like, why would they care? So that we enslave you or kill you.
Because there is always the worry that if we push people too much, they'll rise up in a full-blown rebellion or something.
Sure, but I got like 4 Roman legions.
Yeah.
And I don't care about you at all. Like, you've got to take a much more cynical approach to these things, Bo. You know, you're too modern in your view. Of course, they will happily do this. Why wouldn't they?
Well, it's just, like I say, you can... people and peoples have a limit, and if you grind them down too much, it'll explode.
Yeah, that's true.
But Tiberius does seem to have managed it just about right.
Right, okay.
But on the sort of harsh end of the spectrum. In and around this 15 BC...
Just as a quick thing, it might actually be to the Germans' advantage to be resettled in Gaul.
Maybe.
Gaul was always a better quality of place to live than Germania. So, probably nicer.
Quite often, at least in this period, in this story, when I talk of Germania or the Germans, it's quite often on the Lower Rhine, which is to say West Germany, firmly modern-day West Germany, up in and around modern Holland even. The Lower Rhine runs out through Holland. So on the Gaulish side of the Rhine is the Roman world, and on the far side of the Rhine, Lower Rhine, is sort of the Germanic hinterland. Well, the leader of many of the Germanic tribes in the end is Arminius. Mm-hmm. He's sort of their main foe for a long time. But it's in around this time, around 15 BC, 13 odd BC, that his brother Drusus has a son who later is really important. So and that's Germanicus.
Yeah.
And he is Tiberius's nephew, Germanicus.
And he's the guy who gets the standards back.
Yes, right. Mm. So he becomes, Tiberius's life becomes, a big part of it anyway, becomes wound up with that of Germanicus. Mm. Because when Tiberius becomes emperor, Germanicus is sort of his main rival in all sorts of different ways. And we'll get into it, but it's his own nephew. Mm. And just incidentally to say on that, a bit later, his brother Drusus has another son, a Claudius.
Right.
Who is sort of deformed, whether he's got a hunchback or a club foot, or he stammers, doesn't seem to be completely of sound mind, although actually is. He later becomes the Emperor Claudius.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough. Okay.
So there's loads of times in this story when someone has a kid and it's like, they go on to be really, really important in the next generation or two or three or whatever.
Right, okay.
But that Claudius isn't important in this story whatsoever. But his older brother, Germanicus, is. And he's born around this time. In 13 BC, he goes back to Rome and is awarded his first consulship. So that there now, and he's not a boy anymore by 13 BC. He's a, full...
Well, he's a consul.
Yeah, full-grown man in his 30s and experienced... commanding legions all over the place, multiple armies.
Many victories under his belt.
Now, at this point, he really is being groomed, or it has been successfully groomed, into, if not Augustus's sort of formal successor, in the mix, though. There's very few other men in the Roman world that are sort of on his level, of his rank. Although Augustus is pretty clear that he wants his grandsons, Gaius and Lucius, to inherit, Tiberius is still way up there.
Yeah.
He's up there. The
thing is, Tiberius has gained a kind of experience that you can't just pass on. Right. You know, he's so important, like, to so many people, and he's got so much experience under his belt, and he's so well connected. It's like, look, this guy isn't just going to go away, unless he just dies, if you're lucky. So he doesn't.
And Augustus sees him as like a troubleshooter. Oh, there's trouble on the frontier somewhere. Well, obviously I'm going to send our best man, Tiberius.
Yeah.
Okay, so something I've already mentioned where Agrippa dies, that's in 13 BC.
Yeah.
So I've already talked about that, and he has to marry Julia. And actually his previous wife, Vipsania, is actually pregnant at that point. And so it's...
Good news for her.
It's just like, he sort of never gets over... He genuinely loved her. He sort of never gets over that... being forced to do that.
Well, I've got to abandon my loving pregnant wife for this whore.
Yeah.
Be annoyed too.
Oh, right. Yeah. He like holds it against Augustus and his mother on some level.
I was happy. Forever. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And on top of everything else, that Augustus is clearly favouring the little boys, Gaius and Lucius. That's a real humiliation to Tiberius.
I've solved all of your problems. The least I deserve is a triumph, and I can't have one.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just sent out in Robert Graves's I, Claudius, which is obviously a fictionalisation, but it's still very, very good. There's a bit where Tiberius is moaning about how he's treated by Augustus. He just says, the old man just tells me to just ride, just go and ride and do my bidding. Don't ever dream that you'll be emperor or anything. Just get on your horse and ride. There are letters survive in Suetonius. He quotes letters from Augustus, and they're very, very polite. Like, the dearest Tiberius, thank you for, like, endlessly polite. Thank you for everything you're doing. We couldn't do without you.
Yeah.
You're my right hand, all sorts of things. But the point is that my grandsons are going to inherit.
Yeah, not you.
Yeah. So around that time, about 12 BC again, his brother Drusus dies in an accident.
Oh, no.
He falls off his horse, or his horse falls on him and sort of crushes his leg. And so sort of out of the blue, Drusus, who is this figure that kept him grounded, kept him from like the pits of despair, is killed. Well, he doesn't die straight away. He lingers. And Tiberius happens to be in Rome at the time. And news comes that Drusus, his brother Drusus, had a terrible accident. Tiberius immediately leaps on a horse and rides straight out to Germania, the frontiers in West Germany. And he gets there just in time, like a few hours before Drusus dies of his wounds. And again, he sort of never gets over that. He allows sort of the brooding side of his nature to sort of run away with itself after that.
Well, it's kind of understandable. Again, not psychoanalyzed, but you can see why this would be the case.
Well, yeah.
Because he obviously had like Drusus as a kind of anchor in his mind. And not only is that important person gone, but now the moderating force is also gone. So
in 8 BC, there's still more almost endless wars on the German front. And he does...
This goes on for hundreds of years and then eventually causes the fall of Rome. So
yeah, they never... Yeah. That's one of the things that I've heard people say about the German psyche, is that they were never brought to heel by the Romans.
Yeah. No,
like the most rest of Europe on the Mediterranean world were.
And they ended up bringing Rome down.
Right. So. Yeah, in the end. But in this period, around 8 BC, Tiberius, who was known for being very slow and methodical and making sure everything's done in the right order and not taking any chances, but ultimately always winning.
Yeah, well, that's why he always won.
Right. And he does get a triumph now. It's he's way past time. He should have been given 1 year ago, really.
Yeah.
He is the most eminent general, basically. Well, yeah.
He deserves a triumph.
Yeah. In 7 BC, he gets his second consulship.
Mm-hmm.
In 6 BC, everything starts falling apart. Okay, he's due to be going out to Armenia to put out fires again.
Yeah.
And he just says, no, I'm not doing that. And Augustus is like, wait, what?
You can't say that.
Yeah. What do you mean, no? And Tiberius says, no, I'm just going to retire from public life.
I'm retiring to Rhodes with my whore wife.
Oh, no, not with her.
No, I'm joking. Of course he's not taking
her. All right. Yeah. No, I'm going to Rhodes. I'm ignoring your wife.
Yeah.
I'm going to ignore her.
Yeah.
And I'm going to retire from public life and I'm going to Rhodes and leave me alone. So that's a funny thing. People at the time and ever since have been like, well, that's just a ballsy move on every level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit more than ballsy. It's sort of a bit weird as well, though, still. Like, this man that's used to doing what he's told, used to the idea of duty, took his duty very, very seriously. He's abandoning all of that. He's abandoning all of it.
But the thing is, I can see how, like, I can see, like, maybe I'm being overly sympathetic here, but, like, I mean, how old is he at this point?
What is he? So he's about 40-odd.
Right, so, yeah. So he's about my age, right? You've spent your entire life doing your duty, And things have gone well when you've, in the way you've acted, you've always done what you're supposed to do. You've got everything right. You know, you've conquered, you've won, you've done your duty. You even gave up your beloved wife for someone you absolutely despise. You've done everything. And eventually you're just like, you know what? Nah, I'm just done. Just done. You know, I'm going to look after me. Some me time now. This is some Tiberius time. I'm going to Rhodes and I'm going to drink some wine by the beach and, you know, maybe listen to some lute playing. Who knows? It's going to be some me time.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.